Well, there's a couple things to talk about. First of all, who's expecting what? Police Chief Castor was planning for the biggest turnout she could imagine because she didn't want to be embarrassed and she wanted to maintain order. So there were police everywhere, very visible, trying to keep control of whatever might emerge. And it makes sense for her under any theory to be as overprepared and conservative about estimating crowds as possible. Activists who are organizing the event are always congenitally optimistic about what's going to happen. They believe they're going to be able to sell their message. They believe they're going to be able to generate huge turnouts. You know, they have to be overly optimistic in order to keep doing what they do because it's very, very hard work to get people to show up for demonstrations. And then, so they'll make their best estimate. And then, like somebody going into a car dealership, will inflate it by a little bit because they'll assume that the media will discount whatever they say. Now, what about generating the people there? You know, I don't think the problem with the weather is something to dismiss so quickly. People often make, even if people are planning to come, they'll make that decision to get on the bus at the last minute. And when you're reading reports about hurricanes, going into a place where everybody else is going in the opposite direction is a tough thing to pull off. Now, in contrast to demonstrations at conventions in Minneapolis, St. Paul, or New York, or Miami, the activist net infrastructure in Tampa is, to my knowledge, much less developed. So in New York, there are national headquarters of many activist organizations on the left and on the right. So they've got people who are well experienced in dealing with the police and setting up sound systems and scoping out space and putting up visitors, ready to plan and organize and mobilize whatever happens. That infrastructure is less developed in Tampa, so it's harder to bring people out. You know, I was surprised to learn that even activists in Miami plan to demonstrate in Miami instead of coming up to Tampa. Is that far?
It's about 4 or 5 hours, you know, by car. No, it's not. And that is that is surprising. What do you think the role of these, the concept of these isolated free speech zones is playing into the low numbers? I mean, it used to be you could get right up into somebody's face at a protest, get your message out. But now the protest zones they set up here were so well removed from the delegates, like you could barely see the forum where the action was taking place. Do you think that has any role in?
I think that's a deterrent for people going out. I mean, for sure. And I understand why police officers want to do that. Police officers want to make sure they're not embarrassed and want to maintain order. That's their job. Their job is also to provide access to free speech. And whether or not a park, I think it was called Romneyville in Tampa, like a little encampment place distant from the scene, is enough free speech or not, that's a matter for courts to decide. The courts have said they have to be within sight and sound of the convention site. And my understanding is that in Tampa, it was almost or pretty close to being within sight and sound, but pretty far away. So it doesn't feel like it's significant. You know, but it's astonishing to me that Code Pink was able to get its activists into the convention site twice.
I know, they're very good at that.
Yeah, and you know, like, so what does it mean? The stories that have been reported are that disaffected Ron Paul delegates gave their
credentials. Right.
Now, that's an interesting story. And, you know, Code Pink was able to get, I don't know, probably a total of 45, 50 seconds of national prime time. But it reflects a rift in the Republican Party that may actually wind up being significant if the Ron Paul people actually take their support away or stay home or you know, vote for Gary Johnson or stay home from the polls.
Right.
So, you know, and then when there are fewer numbers, and by all accounts there were fewer numbers than activists hoped at this demonstration, at this set of events in the during the convention, activists have to do something a little more dramatic or colorful to get attention. Thus, we saw the dancing vaginas.
That's a good one. I know. I love that.
Yeah, I mean, so it's like if it's only 100 people or 200 people or 12 people, then they have to do something different in order to make themselves newsworthy. And they went the route of street theater and guerrilla theater in the convention.
Now, are you aware of, we had an action yesterday down my way where I live, the Tampa Electric Big Bend Power Plant. It's a coal-burning power plant by many standards, one of the dirtiest in the state or in the country. And we had a group go down there and actually chain themselves to a structure down there. And even with that, we didn't see any arrests. They bargained with police and no one was arrested. And so that was kind of another, you know, out of the limelight, away from the venue type of thing that got some press.
Well, you're touching on something that's really interesting about the way protest, the policing of protest has developed in like the last 20 or 30 years. For local police chiefs, they want to minimize disruption, enhance predictability, keep their people safe and keep order, try to avoid embarrassment. And activists also have an interest in keeping things running as smoothly as possible. That means that negotiating beforehand has become completely typical of protest politics in the United States. It's not just getting a permit. You say, we're going to stand here, we're going to stay here for so long. People who want to get arrested are going to wear yellow armbands and go in that direction. People who don't want to get arrested will stand back from the curb at this time. And this is all done in advance. It makes it safer. It makes it easier. It also makes it less newsworthy, less disruptive, and whether it's a good deal for the activists is always an open question.
That's what I was just going to ask you. What happens to that message without, and not that I'm advocating broken windows and you know, cars on fire, but there is something to be said about that drama in getting attention and, you know, and not having your message seem co-opted in a way, if you...
Well, I think that's exactly it. So if a bunch of people gather in a park 45, you know, a few hundred feet, a few thousand feet away from what they're protesting about, and they chant and they sing and they tell stories and even make speeches, it's what's the difference between a protest and a picnic?
Exactly.
And, you know, it may give the activists a chance to be together, but it's certainly less newsworthy, less interesting, and perhaps less effective in getting the message out. At the same time, I can understand why people don't want to go into a situation where they don't know what the police are going to do and risk getting beaten or, you know, not just arrest, but risk getting hurt very, very badly. You know, it's hard to watch these conventions and not go back and look at videos on YouTube of the Chicago convention where, you know, kids, demonstrators, 18, 20, 22, were fighting with Chicago police officers and not doing that well in the fight. I mean, not surprisingly, without batons and without guns and without training, they were less effective in street fighting than police who were trained to do this. And I can understand why people who are concerned with economic inequality or war don't want to get beaten up. And I can understand why police don't want to do it.
I'd like to get your take on the conventions overall and ask you if you think these type of lavish, you know, parties and basically coronations, because we already know who the nominee is going to be, have they outlived their usefulness or purpose at this point in time? A lot of people are talking about shortening them, but how about getting rid of them and say instead having a couple of more debates, you know, with the candidates?
You know, the convention has just become the national party conventions have become a ritual and an infomercial now, and it's much less interesting to everybody. And they get federal, you know, they get money from the $3 that you may check off on your income tax. Both parties do. And that may not be the best way to spend our money to inform public debate now. You know, the staggering thing to me also, I've been obsessed about this the last couple of days, is back in the days when mainstream, when, you know, most people depended on mainstream media, like broadcast networks or big newspapers to get their news, there was kind of a filter on veracity. It was hard to say stuff that was, you know, blatantly false or deceptive. And now, because you can get your message out to your own people, to the faithful, through friendly news organizations, and this is true on the left and on the right, and through websites and email lists, there's less of a concern with actually telling stuff that's verifiable. And that's, I don't remember another political convention where so much stuff was said was verifiably untrue. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that the Republicans can't make a case against President Obama. There's plenty of true information that they could be pulling out that would support their cause. But they've, you know, the major speakers chose to just make up stuff in addition to that. You know, the Republicans have shown that you can say whatever you want and you can basically ignore PolitiFact. Doesn't Tampa have one? Doesn't the Tampa paper have one of
The Tampa Bay Times has a great fact-checking
emanates
out of the St. Peter's, what used to be the St. Pete Times. That's fantastic. But again, that's after the fact. While they're delivering this message to, you know, how many tens, you know, millions of people, no one's calling them on it. So, you know, it's almost like a follow-up.
Yeah. And I find, well, I mean, you know, I'm a professor, so it's like I have some interest in believing that there are things that are true, that numbers are, that there can be real numbers, that there are real policies. And apparently this is something you can get around. Now, so that's one of the striking things about this year's convention to me. And I'm sure, you know, absent big disruption, absent any news, that when they look at the ratings, you know, the television ratings for the convention, it's going to be lower than 4 years ago. It's going to be much, much lower than 8 years ago. And it's, you know, it becomes kind of a ritual for the faithful. And I don't think there's a partisan piece to that. I think that's going to be true on the Democratic side, too.